From Rich Broadcasting and KID News Radio, this is the East Idaho Eclipse Podcast, the first episode of a podcast about everything East Idaho is doing to prepare for the upcoming total solar eclipse that crosses America on Monday, August 21st, 2017. I'm Josh Tyler, and in this episode, we'll hear from Dr. Rick Feinberg with the American Astronomical Society, Dr. Brian Jackson with the Boise State University Physics Department, and Michael Zeiler from GreatAmericanEclipse.com. First, though, we need to introduce you to the cast of characters that you're likely to hear from on this and future episodes of the podcast. First, Neil Larson and Calla Curtis from KID News Radio.
Hi.
Hey, Josh.
And Sydney B. Jensen.
How are you doing?
We hope to cover a lot of different material. What are you guys looking forward to with the podcast, and where are we getting started?
For me, I think one of the big surprises or things that I didn't think through before all of this started coming upon us with the eclipse happening soon is how many different angles, how many different lenses there are to look at this podcast through, whether it's public safety or the economy or how it impacts the environment, or I mean, there's just or the scientific angle as well. I didn't stop to think of how many interesting lenses through which we can look at this gargantuan event that's coming.
And the whole event is, I mean, really only a couple of minutes in terms of the totality part. But you're talking about days ahead and days after when these maybe hundreds of thousands of people descend on a certain region, and we have to be prepared. And there's so many different ways that you have to think about how to tackle something like this.
You know, I think logistically too, I've just been looking at this as someone who lives here, and you look at how this is going to impact traffic and the places we shop. And this is something I don't think Southeast Idaho is used to in terms of we have tourism and Yellowstone and things like that, but it never hits this big, this fast. It's almost like a tidal wave of people is hitting Southeast Idaho. And I think that's both fascinating to look at, but it's also going to be kind of a logistical nightmare that people have been navigating for months and years ahead of this. So I'm just glad people are thinking ahead and we get to talk to some of them too.
I think there's this sense of we're all sharing this event together. I mean, it's going across the entire country in a beautiful swath from Oregon down to, I think, South Carolina. It's going to be probably one of the most watched eclipses ever in the history of the world. And I think being a part of that, and especially having the opportunity to live in that path of totality in a place where you're going to have a congregation of hundreds of thousands of people, there's just a sense of excitement that's unique to this.
I think what's going to be the coolest part is just seeing how people react. I love people, and I love seeing how life comes at them and how they deal with life. And I've heard so much about how people will react during the total eclipse. You know, there's this kind of fear that may come upon people. There's other people that are super excited, eclipse chasers. I just can't wait to see the eclipse, obviously, but I can't wait to see how people react, see how people feel about it. A lot of them, it's a first-time experience, unless you're like a full-time eclipse chaser. And so I think that's just going to be so fun to watch the different reactions, both during the eclipse and the anticipation before the eclipse.
I'm with Sydney. You think about how many people we have talked to who say once in a lifetime as they describe this eclipse. And I think for most of us, it probably will be that once in a lifetime opportunity. And, you know, there's certainly a lot of, I mean, years, months and months and years of preparation going into this. But when it all comes down and it's starting to get dark, imagine how you'll feel. And then, you know, there's that totality moment and you can actually see planets and stars in the middle of the day. I mean, it's going to be an unbelievable moment in time for all of us, and we're all going to experience it together.
We've heard a lot of rumors about the amount of people that are going to be traveling to the area, about, you know, going and buying your groceries a couple of weeks ahead of time. We'll be talking about a lot of that. What are some of your favorite speculations, or what are some of your most fearful speculations leading up to August 21st?
I think for me, it's probably just the logistical concerns. Having so many people in East Idaho, we have an interstate coming in with, you know, two lanes on each side. We don't have the capacity for that. It's going to be in the middle of August. We've got to make sure that, you know, people have the water that they need, that they have the gas in the cars that they need, that they, you know, that we're able to get them here and get them out without any really major incidents. I think that for me, that's probably the concern that I have is just from a public safety angle to make sure we don't have kind of a big crisis.
Well, and you think about, we are all so reliant on technology today. And yet a lot of these, first responders and emergency managers, they're saying, we're going to have to tackle this almost like we would an event 30 or 40 years ago. You know, hard phone lines, maybe fax machines, maybe people even running messages back and forth on a four-wheeler. Because when you think about having no access to the internet or cell phones, that's a pretty daunting task for law enforcement.
You know, I think in terms of the speculations I've heard, that my favorite one is that we'll have a cloudy day. You know, I know that everyone says that we're not supposed to.
Don't say that.
I think that's my favorite one. But I also think in terms of logistics, you know, I live in a relatively small town, and we're not used to that kind of influx of people. And so just wondering how businesses are going to handle that as well. I know that can be kind of an exciting prospect for business people, but I also worry about product and shipping and even grocery stores. It is kind of a terms of preparing for a disaster, a really cool disaster, but a disaster nonetheless, because you have this question of what happens if I run out of gas, or what happens if I run out of food. And obviously it's not going to be in terms of not being able to get out and do things, but it is kind of worrisome when you deal with an instant influx of people. How are businesses going to handle that? Are they going to be able to keep up with that exciting tidal wave of income, but also demand they may not be able to meet?
Well, we hope to cover that and a whole bunch more here on the East Idaho Eclipse podcast. The first episode is called Eclipse 101. We hope to get you caught up with what exactly is an eclipse, how's it work, where do you need to be, how do you watch it, what's the safety, all that kind of stuff. We'll dive right in with our first guest. This is Dr. Rick Feinberg. He's the press officer with the American Astronomical Society. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
So tell us a little bit, first of all, about the American Astronomical Society and your role there.
All right. Well, the AAS, as I call it, is the country's association of professional astronomers. We have about 8,000 members. That includes practicing research astronomers, as well as professors at everything from top research universities down to community colleges, and also many, many graduate students and undergraduates who are in the early stages or middle stages of becoming astronomers. And I am the press officer, so I organize press conferences to highlight some of the most interesting scientific results that are being presented at the meeting. We invite the science press to come to our meetings, and we usually get a pretty good turnout, so that's my main role.
You have your own home-built observatory in New Hampshire, and is that where you're at now?
That's right. I spend most weekends there, and eventually I'll probably retire here. I'm both an amateur astronomer and a professional astronomer, so I do astronomy for fun as well as for work, and the boundary between the two is pretty hard to discern. I live and breathe astronomy.
And you've made enough scientific contribution to the field of study that you actually have an asteroid named after you.
That's correct. It wasn't really named after me for my science. It was named after me just for my overall contributions to astronomy. But turns out quite a lot of us in the field have asteroids named after us, because the people who discover asteroids are the ones who get to name them, and most of their friends are astronomers too.
So do you follow the asteroid? Do you know where it is in space right now?
I do. It's in the asteroid belt. And I actually did something that was really fun. I used the telescope in my observatory to measure the asteroid's rotation, which had not yet been measured. And I discovered that I rotate once every 5.3 hours. And it was really fun to be looking through a telescope from my own observatory at an asteroid that bears my name and watch it spin in the telescope. That was pretty cool.
That is very, very cool. For this upcoming eclipse that's headed this way in August, you've been preparing for this one for at least a couple of years. Is that correct?
That's right. We're always preparing for the next one as soon as the last one is over. This one, though, being a very big eclipse that crosses the entire United States, has been on our radar for many, many years. It's funny. It's probably going to be the best observed total solar eclipse in history, because it passes, you know, across thousands of miles of populated continent. But for me, it'll be the least exotic eclipse I've ever seen, because whereas my last one was in Indonesia, and I saw one from the Arctic Ocean, and I've seen them from the South Pacific, this one I'll be watching from Oregon.
And it starts in Oregon, and it leaves the country where?
It actually starts out in the Pacific Ocean. It hits the continent at the coast of Oregon, and then it traverses 12 states and just nicks two others. And exits just past Charleston, South Carolina, and then goes out into the Atlantic.
I guess as far as being in the line of totality, for people that are unfamiliar with that terminology, what does that mean?
All right, I'll tell you two things. First of all, the first thing it means is you guys are incredibly lucky, because a total eclipse passes over any given spot of land, on average, only once every four centuries or so. So the fact that you don't have to go anywhere, that the eclipse is coming to you, that's really spectacular. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, what does it mean for the eclipse to come to you? The path of totality is simply the path of the moon's dark shadow as it crosses the Earth's surface. And so it's about 70 miles wide. The moon is about 2,000 miles wide, but it's pretty far away. It's 240,000 miles away. And by the time the sunlight casts the moon's shadow onto Earth, that shadow is only about 70 miles wide, at least on August 21st. So it hits the coast of Oregon, and then it zips across the country at about 2,000 miles an hour, and it traces out a 70-mile-wide path. Anyone within that path will, for up to 2.5 minutes or so, see the moon completely blocking the sun's bright face and revealing the sun's outer atmosphere, the spectacular corona, which is the star of any total solar eclipse. So you'll actually be in the shadow of the moon, and you will see it get very dark, not as dark as like midnight, but like a deep twilight, a very deep blue sky. The brightest stars and planets will come out. But again, the most spectacular thing that you see is something that's always there, but never visible except when the moon completely blocks the sun, and that's the sun's corona. It's this beautiful, wispy, pearly white radiance that looks unlike anything else in nature, and that has loops and streamers and all kinds of things that are sculpted by the sun's magnetic field. And it's just, I mean, it's literally otherworldly, and it's truly breathtaking. The thing that people are really looking for, and that they can never see at any other time, is the sun's corona. But not only that, the outer atmosphere, but for a few brief seconds at the very beginning and very end of totality, there's another layer of the sun's atmosphere, a much thinner layer, much closer to the surface, called the chromosphere, or color sphere, which is a layer of very hot hydrogen gas that glows with a spectacular, brilliant magenta color, a very, very deep red-pink color. And it's a little arc of red right along the limb of the sun, and right at the beginning of totality, it hasn't yet been covered by the moon. The sun's bright face is covered, but this chromosphere is still visible, so you get this beautiful red arc. And then the moon finally covers that, too. But sometimes you see little jets of hot gas that are jumping off the limb of the sun. These are called solar prominences. They're made of that same hot gas glowing pink or red. And sometimes those prominences will be big enough that they last quite a while. In fact, at last year's eclipse that I viewed in Indonesia, there was one prominence that was so tall that it was visible throughout totality, which was really spectacular. So you get the jet black silhouette of the moon, you get the pearly white gossamer strands of the corona, but you also get this magnificent, beautiful reddish pink color in between. And then at the end of totality, that thin layer of the chromosphere is unveiled again for just a few seconds before the photosphere pops out again and the sun is too bright to look at safely.
So let's talk a little bit about safety, because you hear people talk about totality and feeling like they can just view the sun with the naked eye, and we know that's not the case. What are maybe some precautions that people should take as they prepare to view the eclipse?
Well, the first thing is to note that during totality itself, when the moon has completely blocked the sun's bright face, it actually is safe to look at the sun directly without any protection. You can even look at the sun through binoculars or a telescope during totality. But at all other times, when any part of the sun's bright face, even the thinnest sliver, is visible, you must use some kind of protection. And there's two basic kinds. One is to use inexpensive special purpose eclipse glasses or eclipse shades that you can buy from any number of suppliers and or order online. And the other one is to use some kind of indirect viewing method. So for example, the one that I prefer is I just interlace my fingers, making a little waffle pattern of my fingers, and put my back to the sun and look at the shadow of my fingers on the ground. And during the partial phases of the eclipse, the little spaces between my fingers cast little crescent suns on the ground. But that way I'm not looking at the sun. The sun's at my back. But if you're going to look directly at the sun, either when it's not an eclipse or when it's partially eclipsed, you must use some kind of safe solar filter. And in the past, people used to come up with all kinds of crazy things that they thought were safe. But in fact, They may have dimmed the sun enough so that it was comfortably bright, or I should say comfortably dim. The problem, though, is that the sun emits not just visible light, but also infrared and ultraviolet light, and those can be harmful to your eyes, too, and you might not even realize that you're getting too much of that light because you don't see it, and your eye doesn't have any pain receptors in the retina, so you can hurt yourself without even knowing it. So there's a special rating, an international safety rating called ISO 12312-2. You don't really have to worry about the number so much. If you have eclipse glasses or eclipse shades or an eclipse viewer, just make sure that the manufacturer or the dealer that you get it from has certified it according to the ISO safety system. And as long as that's the case, they'll be safe.
So there's some other weird sort of science things that happen during eclipses. I mean, we talk about it gets dark, obviously, because the sun is hidden. And there's temperature change that happens and some other anomalies. Tell me about some of those other weird things that happen.
Yeah, well, what a total eclipse is like a sped-up sunset and then followed by a sped-up sunrise. Sunset and sunrise typically elapse over a half hour, 45 minutes, something like that. But in this case, all the action happens over just a few minutes. So it does get dark, but it gets dark so quickly that it's just almost spooky. And then because you're inside the moon's shadow, but there are regions, 30, 40 miles away in all directions that are still in sunlight, you see the horizon ringed by beautiful sunset colors, the yellows and the pinks and the tangerines of a sunset or a sunrise. So that's very pretty. And as I mentioned earlier, bright stars and planets come out. During totality, you're standing in the moon's shadow. The sun is no longer shining, so it naturally cools down. People have measured the temperature change, and it has been recorded to be, 10, 15 degrees Fahrenheit. So it's quite noticeable, especially on a bright sunny day when you're suddenly in deep shade. You really feel it cool down. And sometimes the wind will change direction or change speed. Sometimes because the air is cooling so fast, the sky will be clear before totality and then it'll get some clouds during totality, or vice versa. Sometimes it'll be cloudy and some of the clouds will dissipate during totality. It all depends on the specifics of the local conditions. But the point is the sunlight goes away and therefore the environment changes quite dramatically. And you'll even see animals and birds and insects react to it. They think that the beginning of totality is sunset. So if you're on a farm, the animals head back to the barn. If you're in a place where there are bats, the bats come out to feed. If you're in a place where there's mosquitoes at sunset and sunrise, you're going to get swarmed by mosquitoes. So you just have to be aware of that.
Along those same lines, I mean, people have talked about different reactions that they themselves have had to being in the shadow of the eclipse. And I guess, is there something that happens biologically to humans that sort of makes them become fanatics or some sort of strange eclipse psychosis?
Well, I wouldn't call it an eclipse psychosis, but there's definitely a thing that happens to some people. The thing is, a total solar eclipse is a complete sensory experience. You feel it, you hear it, hear it in the sense of hearing other people screaming and shouting, and of course you see it. It can be very emotional. It's unlike any other experience you can ever have. It never gets dark that quickly. It never gets bright again that quickly. You never see the sky look this way. So it can be overwhelming. And for some people, it has a spiritual component. For some people, it's just, a raw emotion. It almost gets back to our reptilian brain where we're afraid of things we don't understand. And I've seen scientists cry at eclipses just because they're so beautiful and they just get overwhelmed. And so typically what happens is, some fraction of people, me included, will just be so hooked by the experience that they want to have it again. And so they become what we call umbrophiles or eclipse chasers. Umbra is the Latin word for the moon's dark inner shadow, the umbra. So we become umbrophiles. We love the shadow. And we go all over the world to see them. And it's a small fraction of people. It's even a small fraction of amateur astronomers or professional astronomers. But there will be a whole lot of new umbrophiles born on August 21st, 2017, because almost all of the hundreds of millions of people who are going to see that eclipse tens of millions who will see totality will want to see at least another one.
And you've captured some of these things in some pretty amazing astrophotography from your observatory. For amateurs and even maybe some pro amateurs out there that want to try to actually take pictures of the eclipse, should they even try? And are there some tips or pointers you could offer?
The first thing I would say is that if this is your first total solar eclipse, it's really best not to worry about trying to take pictures. There's two reasons. First reason is that it's only going to last about 2 minutes or 2.5 minutes. And so you have very little time to absorb all of these phenomenal sights and the experience that you'll have. So wasting time trying to take pictures when there are other people who will be posting much better pictures on the internet within minutes of the eclipse, it just seems like it's not a good use of that precious few minutes. The other reason is that there's a second total solar eclipse coming to the United States in just 6.5 years after this one. And that'll be longer. It'll be more than 4 minutes. Doesn't cross the same part of the U.S., though there is one little region in southern Illinois where the two paths cross. But the point is that you'll have a second chance not that far away. And if you've seen an eclipse already, then you'll be willing to spend a little bit of time taking pictures during the next one, especially since it's longer. But some people want to take a picture anyway. And the general rule is during the partial phases, just like with viewing, you have to have a special filter over your camera lens. You cannot take a picture of the sun without a filter over it and expect to get anything except during totality. So if you have a filter for your camera, terrific. Go ahead and take some pictures of the partial phases. You'll take very short exposures and you'll capture the sun. But during totality, you don't need any filters. You can just point your camera and take a picture. And because the range of brightnesses in the totally eclipsed sun is pretty intense, from the inner corona, which is as bright as the full moon, to the outer corona and the blue sky, which is quite a bit fainter, almost any picture you snap during totality will get something, and it'll be your souvenir, even with a phone, a phone camera. But again, I would actually recommend not taking pictures if this is your first eclipse. If it's not your first eclipse or you're just bound and determined to take pictures, there's lots of good information online about how to do it. We have some information on our website at eclipse.aas.org. And so the key there is to really make sure you know what you're doing, that you have the right equipment, and that you practice. You do not want to be fumbling around during 2 minutes of totality and end up missing it.
So is there anything else that you want to pass along to our listeners as we're kind of closing out here that they should know about this particular eclipse that maybe we haven't touched on?
I just would like to emphasize that totality is very, very special, and it's the difference between totality and a partial eclipse is literally the difference between night and day. If you can possibly get into the path, if you don't already live in the path, you really, really should try to do it. You won't be disappointed. I have been telling people about total solar eclipses for a couple of decades, and I've always asked afterwards if I overhyped the event. And the first-timers always tell me, nope, you didn't overhype it. In fact, you undersold it. It was even more spectacular than you led me to believe it would be. It's something that should be on everybody's bucket list. As I mentioned, an eclipse comes to you very rarely. So for those of you who are in Oregon or Wyoming or Idaho or Nebraska or any of the other states where the eclipse is coming, especially if it's just a short drive, you've really got to try to get yourself into totality. If you see only the partial phases using safe solar filters or one of the projection methods, you will think you saw a total eclipse, or you'll think you saw a solar eclipse, and you will have seen a partial, but when you then start reading about what people saw and experienced in totality, you'll really regret that you didn't make the trip. There is a second chance, another eclipse coming to the U.S. in 2024, but that's a long time to wait, and so I hope that as many people as possible will get themselves into the path. And for those of you in Idaho who are already there, just enjoy the fact that you're having some very, very good cosmic luck.
The American Astronomical Society has put together a very amazing website. You mentioned it earlier. I'm sure you had a hand in putting this together. It's got a ton of information. We want to encourage people to check that out. It's at eclipse.aas.org. Dr. Feinberg, thank you very much for sharing your time with us today.
You're very welcome. Enjoy the eclipse.
Yes, you as well. Thank you very much. Coming up, Neil and Calla sit down with Michael Zeiler from GreatAmericanEclipse.com. That's next, after a message from our sponsor.
The East Idaho Eclipse podcast is sponsored by Michael Canavan Financial Planner. It's never too early to plan for your retirement. Michael is putting on free educational seminars, starting with Social Security, on Tuesday, August 8th, 6:30 p.m. at the Idaho Falls Public Library. Michael Canavan, you can call him at 208-523-3093. Waddell & Reed Financial Advisors, member FINRA SIPC. Welcome back to the show. Neil Larson and Calla Curtis sit down with Michael Zeiler from GreatAmericanEclipse.com.
Michael, you and your wife, Polly, you operate the website GreatAmericanEclipse.com, and it is fantastic. I've gone to it. You've sent us some of your material, which thank you, by the way. It's so incredibly informative. But as you prepare for this, you're a longtime eclipse chaser, and I know that scientists from NASA and other groups, they want to see that corona, not just for its beauty, but they're also studying it scientifically as well. What are they learning from that?
Well, absolutely. What they're looking for are there's a big mystery about the temperature ranges in the solar corona. It turns out that the sun's corona is actually 100 times hotter than the surface of the sun, and that's completely counterintuitive fact. And so that's the current big mystery, is unraveling precisely what's behind that. They know, the solar astronomers know, that the sun's magnetic field is involved, but the details are still being worked out on that. So that's an example of science that's still occurring during total solar eclipses.
Michael, I think for most people, because this is kind of a once-in-a-lifetime event, how should they have the best experience and get the most out of it?
Well, first of all, if it's your first ever, then by all means, be with your family and with your friends and enjoy it as a group experience. But to actually view the eclipse, I'd like to spend about half of my time gazing with my eye on the corona, and then I make a quick survey of the sky and see how it's twilight all the way around. It's like a deep twilight, half an hour or 40 minutes after sunset. That's what it appears to be all around you. But then to get the very best view of all, for about half of the duration of the eclipse, I like to use binoculars and study the details of the corona and other features of an eclipse, such as prominences on the edge of the moon's limb. You can actually see that with binoculars, so that's a great way to see it too.
When we look at this, and obviously there are a lot of moving parts when it comes to an eclipse, Idaho Falls is in our region. It's the largest city within the path of totality for us here in East Idaho. We are expecting a large influx of people from Salt Lake City, even down to Las Vegas and Southern California. One of the things that your website informs people about is this concept of a drive shed. And Idaho Falls happens to be the second largest drive shed in the country. At the same time, it's a city of about 60,000 people. We're not equipped to handle that kind of an influx. So maybe comment on that. What do cities do in other eclipses that you've seen that attract lots of people? What do they do right in order to accommodate those large masses of people coming?
Well, the planners that I've spoken to are treating it as a natural disaster. They're planning for it as a predictable natural disaster. For example, if you look at the maps that I've published on my website, it's very predictable where the real traffic choke points are going to be inside the path of totality. And there are going to be some major issues, but the message that I and others doing eclipse outreach, I think, are trying to spread is, first of all, arrive at your destination early. Don't think about driving into the path at 9 a.m. on the morning of the eclipse. That's not going to work. So get there as early as you can. And if you're leaving from a nearby city, say from Boise up Highway 84, leave earlier than you think. Although Boise might be safe because there aren't any other population centers around there, but certain areas like Salem, Oregon, that's a very predictable jam that's going to happen there. So the message is get there early, distribute yourselves well inside the path of totality. And if people do that, there's plenty of room for everybody.
I guess there's one silver lining to us being a fairly rural state is that we've got a lot of country that is not populated. And if people are willing to drive maybe a few extra miles, they can get, you know, into the backcountry or out into the mountains somewhere or smaller areas that might be 100 miles within the most populated region. Is that something that you would advise people should do, is maybe go to one of these less populated areas?
Yes, and in the western United States, we have a lot of federal lands in as BLM lands and also as national forests. And I think what you were just referring to is a possibility of open dispersed camping in BLM land and national forest land. And so as long as you follow some guidelines about proximity to the road or bodies of water and take care of common sense precautions, like if there are bears in the area, store your food appropriately and take the proper precautions, things like that. But provided people have that comfort level of camping, then they're going to have a fabulous experience. They're also going to have the wonderful bonus of a lot of city folk who've never really seen the Milky Way in its glory as you have in Idaho. Well, these people are also going to be gobsmacked by camping in a very dark sky and seeing the Milky Way at night as well.
The total darkness part of it is like a 2.5 minutes, but the entire process takes a couple of hours. Do you recommend people are outside and enjoying that whole 2-hour period, or what's your best advice for that?
It depends on their interest level. It'll be a bit over an hour. I think about an hour and 10 minutes from the very first nibble of the moon upon the sun's disk to totality. And if people have the interest, then by all means watch it, especially when it gets close. But if it's a very hot day, it would be fine for people to seek shade and be comfortable on that day.
But don't miss the 2.5 minutes, right?
Don't miss the 2.5 minutes. I say that because in past eclipses, some people kept their eclipse glasses on during totality and missed the show.
Mm.
That's actually happened.
Weird things happen. Some people get into a trance-like state and they just start walking without even knowing that they're doing that. Other people may start screaming in kind of a primal way. As an eclipse chaser, is there something to this weirdness? Is there something primal or spiritual that goes on during a total solar eclipse?
Well, absolutely there is. And it's funny because lots of times you hear stories about how animals react to a total solar eclipse and how animals act strangely. I think humans act even more strangely during an eclipse, especially if it's your first one, because it's like nothing you've ever seen before in your life. And it has a very ominous feeling, too, because you sense this giant shadow coming to envelop you, and it's like a rush when it suddenly reaches you, and you get this amazing show in the sky like nothing you've ever seen before. So it's a deeply emotional experience, and people will react in a variety of ways. Like you said, typically, if you're with a group of people, at the moment that totality begins and you glimpse that sight of the diamond ring, everyone around you will gasp or cry out or shout. And then there will be a chatter. People will say, "Oh my God!" And people will make comments to the effect of it surpassed their expectation, because it pretty much does for everyone.
I'm looking forward to it.
Me
very much
too.
So.
A great description of a really grand event that we have to look forward to. So we're really lucky here in Southeast Idaho that this path of totality is going right over most of our heads. So for a lot of people, it's just go out and look up, right?
There's a group of people, we call ourselves eclipse chasers, somewhat like tornado chasers, except our goal is the exact opposite of the tornado chasers. We're seeking blue skies. People like us, we've gone all over the world. I personally traveled to Africa, the Arctic, Australia, several times at sea, Baja California, Caribbean. I've traveled all over the world to see this, but now it's coming right to our backyard. So this is such an easy and wonderful eclipse. And I like to call this the Great American Eclipse because it's so accessible to so many millions of Americans. And that's the beauty of this eclipse. So many people will see it, and we're so excited.
You don't have to divulge this if it's too personal, but what are your plans for the eclipse?
The way that an eclipse chaser approaches this is more of a strategy than a destination. Although you do have a destination picked out, but what you really think about is range of motion. So first of all, you try and pick a spot that has pretty good weather odds. And then secondly, you look at the road network in that area. And what you really want is a highway that stays inside that path of totality, because if there's a local weather system where you are, this is such a precious thing to see that you'll hop in your car and drive several hundred miles if you need to. But ideally, you want a highway that stays inside the path so that you'll at least see something and maximize your odds. So you think about that a lot. And I looked at the map long and hard and weighed all the considerations. I came up with first a range. A range from Idaho to western Nebraska, and a target of Casper, Wyoming. And Casper offered me that combination that I was looking for, which is a good highway that is inside the path of totality. But if cloudy in Wyoming and Nebraska, then I'm going to join you fine people over there in the Snake River Valley of Idaho.
We would love that, and we're glad that we're one of your plan Bs.
Well, we're all looking forward to August 21st, of course, the day of the Great American Eclipse. Michael Zeiler, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much.
There's still more East Idaho Eclipse podcasts to come. We chat with Boise State University physics professor Dr. Brian Jackson after this message from our sponsor.
The East Idaho Eclipse podcast is sponsored by Scotty's Drive-In, serving Idaho Falls for over 50 years and home of the mouth-watering Eclipse Burger. This original has an onion bun, ham, egg over easy, bacon, and cheddar cheese. It will eclipse your hunger, and when you pair it with fresh-cut Idaho French fries and one of Scotty's famous shakes, totality awesome. Scotty's Drive-In, just off Northgate Mile in Idaho Falls. Come hungry.
Most of us are watching the eclipse from an average Joe perspective. But what's it like if you're a scientist? We talked with Dr. Brian Jackson, a Boise State University professor in BSU's physics department.
Hey, good morning.
It's been called astronomy you can't ignore. What can people expect?
It's going to be a really extraordinary once-in-a-lifetime kind of event. If you weren't hearing about this event right now on the radio, you would notice it on August 21st because the sun will disappear from the sky.
It'll get dark as night.
Yeah, the stars will come out. It will get cool. The humidity will go up. This will be a very noticeable event.
So most of us are going to be watching those things you just described, kind of just what we're observing with our eyes. But you're a scientist. You're a professor in physics. What will you be watching for, and what are you going to try and glean from these few minutes?
Well, there's a number of citizen science projects that are being run across the country to take advantage of this really unique opportunity. One that we're participating in here in the physics department at Boise State is called Citizen KATE. And this is an effort to deploy an array of telescopes all along the path of totality in the United States. And by recording images during the eclipse at lots and lots of different places, you can take the eclipse that would usually only be 2 minutes long, you can extend it out to 90 minutes by cutting all these pictures together. And so that effort is being run out of the University of Arizona's National Solar Observatory. But this is going to be a really amazing event, really for anybody. You don't need special equipment. If you can see the sun on this day, you will be able to see the eclipse.
What are some tips maybe you would have so people can have the best experience?
The physics department at Boise State has set up a website discussing details of the eclipse specifically for Idaho, and I can give that to you. It's physics.boisestate.edu/eclipse. Very easy to find. Google is also a really great resource for this.
There's a couple of questions that I have for you, because I think we all kind of understand the idea of the moon blocking out the sun. That's pretty easy to grasp. But I've noticed as I look along the path of totality, some locations, it's blocked out longer than others. I think it starts out under 2 minutes. By the time it gets to Idaho, it'll be a little over 2 minutes, and it'll be 2.5 minutes or greater as it gets across the middle part of the country. Why does that time, the duration of totality, change in any given location?
The duration of the totality depends on basically the geometry of alignment between where you are standing on the surface of the Earth, where the moon is in the sky, and where the sun is in the sky. So you can think about it as if you had a person standing far away from you and another person standing even farther away. And depending on where you're standing relative to those two people, you're going to see the two people blocking one another out. And so as the moon is moving around the Earth in its orbit and the Earth is going around the sun in its orbit and spinning, all of those sort of conspire to give you slightly different eclipse experiences depending on where exactly you are to observe it.
Okay, here's a question. We name hurricanes, we even name comets, but we don't name eclipses. Do you know why that is?
Yeah, we don't have a good name for each eclipse. This is being referred to kind of colloquially as the Great American Eclipse, because the eclipse track is going to cross over the entire United States. So people are kind of calling this the Great American Eclipse. This sort of thing has actually happened before. Back in 1918, there was another eclipse that had a very similar track that basically came from the northwest and went out to the southeastern United States. But that's the last time that kind of thing happened here in the U.S. So if people want to call this something, I think the Great American Eclipse, that's a good name probably.
What do we learn from seeing the sun's corona during those couple of minutes?
The corona is actually where coronal mass ejections originate. So if you have worries, for instance, about communication satellites being knocked out by space weather, if you've ever seen an aurora borealis, all of those are actually an effect of material launched from the sun's corona. And so scientists study the corona to try to understand not only the sun, but also to understand these dangers posed by space weather.
So Boise State is doing outreach efforts really across the state in preparation for the eclipse. Can you tell us about that?
Our statewide eclipse tour, which is sponsored by the Governor's STEM Action Center and donations from Boise State community, we're going to tour all across the United States. So I've been out to Argo, I've been out to actually all the way to Ontario and Oregon, and we'll host a conversation with the community about the eclipse, what's going to happen, how to prepare for it, and we will also distribute free eclipse shades. So if you don't already have a pair of eclipse shades, they're not that hard to get. If you don't already have one, you can get them at this event by showing up.
Day of eclipse, what's your plan A?
The eclipse track is not actually passing right through Boise, where I live, and so we're going to actually head north a little ways to get to the path of totality. Your listeners should realize that we're going to have probably tens of thousands, if not more, people coming to our state just to observe the eclipse. Idaho is actually one of the best places in the U.S. to observe the eclipse, and so they should be prepared for a lot of traffic on that day, lots of visitors to their town, people basically coming from all over the world to see this once-in-a-lifetime event.
Yeah.
All right, we can't wait. It's August 21st, of course, the Great American Eclipse. Brian Jackson, Assistant Professor, Department of Physics, Boise State University. Thank you so very much.
This episode of the East Idaho Eclipse podcast was produced by me, Josh Tyler, with editing help from Todd Flatland and Sydney B. Jensen. Special thanks to Rick Feinberg from the American Astronomical Society. You can follow him on Twitter at Rick Feinberg. Boise State University physics professor, Dr. Brian Jackson, and Michael Zeiler from GreatAmericanEclipse.com. Check out their website. They've got some great infographics. Music for the East Idaho Eclipse podcast is by Lee Rosevere. Our credit music is written, produced, and performed by Chris Zabriskie. Our website, where you can listen to all of our episodes and find a ton of Eclipse resources, including safety information, traffic updates, live camera feeds, an Eclipse event calendar, and all the geeky Eclipse science information we've collected, is KIDNewsRadio.com/Eclipse.
And we want to hear from you. Send us your Eclipse stories and submit your questions at KIDNewsRadio.com/Eclipse. And don't forget to subscribe to the East Idaho Eclipse podcast so you don't miss an episode. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and anywhere else you get podcasts.
The East Idaho Eclipse podcast is a production of Rich Broadcasting and KID News Radio.